The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB AM 860. We've got an interesting show lined up for you today. If you would like to join this conversation, please feel free to do so. You can call in by dialing 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. And what we've got lined up today are some really critical topics. The first is the World Health Organization Pandemic Agreement, this thing that's been negotiated now for years that has been changed over time. It's really hard to keep track of this. So we've got James Roguski calling in again to join the show and give us an update from our last discussion. At 12:30, we've got Stephanie Borowitz from the Freedom Caucus, member of the Pennsylvania House. She's going to give us an update on some of the crazy things that are now being put through the House here in Pennsylvania by this radical Democrat group that now controls it. And between 1 and 2 o'clock, we're going to have an interesting conversation about what's going on in Delaware County with this illegal alien mass migration issue, where there has been reporting on efforts by different groups to convert empty hospitals into migrant housing, or to take some open space and convert it into a migrant housing operation. We know that there is massive profit available to people that are working in this human trafficking arena. You know, whether they be non-governmental institutions like or entities like Lutheran charities, Catholic charities, chambers of commerce are getting grants, economic development agencies are getting grants, all to move people from all over the world into communities that have no idea what's coming for them. So we're going to talk about that between 1 and 2, what exactly is happening in Delaware County. In the meantime, we had a great town hall last night in Malvern. Keystone Town Hall was last night, and we had some fantastic guests. So what we talked about last night was a couple of different things. First, we covered some of the data that reflects what has really happened in the electorate. Now, we're talking specifically about the electorate in Chester County. And there have been some things that have been taken as a given because they were pushed by a lot of political insiders who said that Chester County has changed from 150 years of Republican domination to absolute total radical Democrat control, that happened because of some shift in migration, domestic migration. In other words, people moved out of Philadelphia into Chester County. They moved out of New York, Connecticut, New Jersey into Chester County, and they brought with them their radical ideology and therefore have changed Chester County over to a Democrat-controlled county. Well, as it turns out, when you dig into the data, that's absolutely not true. It is not a result of an imbalance of people moving in and out of the county, changing the demographics of the county. The other thing, of course, that everyone was told is that bad candidates were the reason why Republicans aren't winning. Of course, anybody that paid attention to the candidates in the 2023 cycle for judge or for some of the county offices, township offices, and school boards, they saw fantastic candidates. So candidate quality is not it, and certainly not when in 2022 someone like Fetterman and the Democrats elected a dead person actually to the House. So it isn't candidate quality. That's been disproven. And the third thing they said, of course, that the consultants and whatnot told us is, well, these counties have shifted because of the use of mail-in ballots. But if you look at the math and you look at the timing, the control of these major targets, these counties that are some of the top 20 counties in the nation, there are about 3,143 counties in the country, and 20 of them can determine the outcome of an election, and 3 of them are in Southeast Pennsylvania. They have all shifted to total Democrat control, and all of that happened before the first mail-in ballot was printed. There were no mail-in ballots when this control shifted. So the idea that mail-in ballots did it is another myth. So the three big reasons we were given why these counties have shifted have all now been completely debunked. They're just simply not true. So what is true? Why have these counties shifted? And what we learned last night was that these counties have shifted because of a lack of focus on messaging to the electorate on issues that matter. issues like child pornography in schools. There are still millions of people in the country that don't even know that happened, that are unaware that a huge number of our schools, public and private, have had child pornography on the shelves. Now, why that wasn't talked about is a mystery to me. But all of the consultants, all the informed people said, hey, you can't talk about that. As a result, no one knows about it. And the people who perpetrated that transition from libraries without explicit sexual materials to libraries full of it, those folks were never held to account. You know, other issues that have been ignored because what we don't have in the conservative community or the Republican community or the constitutional patriot community is a lot of communication around the important issues that change our world. So that's really what's happened here is you've got ineffective political organization, ineffective political execution, campaigns that come in and start too late with too little money and too little strategy, and are just overwhelmed by this massive globalist Democrat machine that is funded by people from New York and California, from Connecticut, from Europe, that has control of the media. There's just what I call the Hydra, this Democrat machine that is just steamrolling over the country and certainly has steamrolled through those counties. That's the real answer. So you're not going to mail in ballot your way out of it. The only way we get out of this is for average citizens to get involved and drive messaging. Now, the other thing we talked about last night is exactly this. We spoke with some people, Rosalind Williams from Americans for Prosperity and Jenny Dallas from the Libre Initiative. Thanks to them for joining us last night. It was a fascinating conversation, but really gave us direct insight into what's going on in the Hispanic community, what's going on in Philadelphia and among Black Americans, and what are these folks really caring about? What are they concerned about? And of course, the number one issue that I think we can take away from that is you cannot get votes from voters you don't speak to. This is a topic we've covered on the Conservative Voice at great length, but the truth of the matter is there are huge populations of people in places like Philadelphia, in places like Pittsburgh and other cities that there is no conservative contact. And it's great news that these great patriots like Rosalind Williams and Jenny Dallas and the folks they work with are out in those markets talking to those voters and helping them understand what is driving inflation and what they can do to fight back and what is causing the breakdown of the family unit and this whole concept the Marxists have of destroying the nuclear family and how they can fight back. It is great to see heroes like Rosalind and Jenny going into the community and carrying a message that would be the critical message to restore the nation. So we had a great town hall last night. It was really interesting. And today we turn our attention then to what's going on at the World Health Organization. So as you may know, the World Health Organization and the other globalists that they work with, including the globalists in our government, created something called the Intergovernmental Negotiating Body. And the point of this group was to create a unified document, a document that would be signed on by the member nations. They would try to get all the members of the UN involved, that would establish a specific protocol for handling the next pandemic. Now, they say the next pandemic because we all know that they're working hard in the labs to create more deviant viruses that will come out and attack the populace. So we know there's going to be one because they're going to create another one. But the idea is that they would have a single document that would unify all these countries so that a governing body, in this case the World Health Organization, would set policy and the countries that had signed this agreement, the signatories, would then execute the plan. Now, what's interesting, of course, if you go back to 2020 and 2019, 2021, that time frame, you see that the nations that did not execute the World Health Organization plan had better outcomes dealing with this Fauci COVID thing than the nations that did. In fact, the more you followed what the CDC and the World Health Organization told you to do, the worse your outcomes were. So Uganda outperformed New York City by a long shot. There's a province that a lot of folks studied called Uttar Pradesh in India. Uttar Pradesh was at that time about 237 million people, far better outcomes than the United States. So what we saw was that countries that actually treated the illness with effective medications or with supplements that boosted your immune system, that didn't lock their people down and abuse them, those nations, those provinces, depending on where they were, those places had better outcomes than the United States. One of the folks that was at our town hall last night was saying, hey, what's going on with this World Health Organization agreement? I said, tune in tomorrow. We've got James Roguski coming on to tell us. And James is with us now. James, welcome once again to the Conservative Voice. How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me.
So we're really glad to have you back, because I got to tell you, I pay attention, and it's hard for me to follow what's going on with this agreement. It's been a long process. It's gone through a lot of changes. There is a lot that people think is in this thing that may not be in it now, and so on. Can you kind of walk us through what's happening? Oh, by the way, you sent me a note that said that at 8 a.m. Pacific time, what's that, 11 o'clock Eastern, there will be the final meeting of the intergovernmental negotiating body to determine the final terms of this agreement. Is that right?
Yes, most of their meetings are held in secret, and they generally show up and do a live stream to close out their session, and they negotiate a final report of all of the things that they did in secret. And that will be happening at some point today. They're having great difficulty. But let me rewind just a little bit and put the bigger picture on this, so that people who, quite frankly, if this is the first time anybody's hearing about this, they're probably better off, because there's so much misinformation that's been flying around. If everyone could just erase the blackboard of their mind and start fresh, here's the current state of affairs, okay? All of the things that you said leading into talking to me, all of these local issues, the mask mandates, the jabs, the, you know, people trying to tell you that you can't keep your job, or you can't get health care, or you can't travel or go into a business or do all of the things that people are supposed to do in a free society. Your local tyrants did not need any amendments to the international health regulations or any new treaty to abuse your rights and freedoms, or try to, over the past 4.5 years. Many of the jurisdictions around the nation have actually made laws that are even worse than they were during COVID. It all depends where you live. Some maybe have gotten better. So the types of things that the vast majority of people are concerned with, you got to dig into your local situation, your school board, your city council, your county commissioners, your state, you know, and the federal government. That's not what the WHO is doing. The WHO is amending, or trying to, talking about, you know, negotiating, amending the international health regulations. Primarily, where that will influence people is if they ever go to travel outside the country. When you leave, you know, the airspace of the United States and you're in international waters, or you go to another country, it's nice that we have a Bill of Rights to protect our rights while we're here. But when you are there, you know, over there, like during World War One, you're at their mercy. And if anyone was to read Article 31 of the existing international health regulations, It says very clearly, now this is not the WHO mandating anything, this is all of the member nations have agreed amongst themselves, that if you're outside of your country and you're somewhere else, they can compel international travelers to have a mandatory medical examination, prophylaxis or prevention, the things that they call vaccines, which really don't work, or isolation and quarantine. That's been the rule in this international health regulation for 19 years. They want to strengthen it with an amendment to Article 24 in the latest version of it, by saying that nations could institute isolation and quarantine as appropriate. And one of the words that's defined in the international health regulations is the word suspect. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, of that term is somebody who committed a crime, but in the use in the international health regulations, a suspect is anybody who came anywhere near some kind of contaminant or contagion, and some, you know, authority figure deems it appropriate to label you as a suspect, and boom, you're in isolation or quarantine. Now, that's the biggest concern that I have, along with the fact that the WHO wants to be the one who decides what tests and what jabs are acceptable. Mm. Well, the premise of all of this is, well, hold on just a moment. The PCR is not a test. We all, well, maybe not all of us, but the vast majority of people got unbelievably scammed into believing that a negative result or a positive result, depending upon how they want to twist it, on a fake test, the use of the PCR to tell people that they are, you know, they have an asymptomatic case of some problem is fraudulent. And saying that you have to get a jab to protect other people, if you've looked into the, you know, concept that these products might actually be shed from the person who just received them, it might actually be the person who has the most recent vaccine certificate is the one who is actually a danger to their fellow men and women. And so the fundamental idea that you can restrict someone's life based on a fraudulent test or a fraudulent jab needs to be challenged on every level, from, you know, local school board on up to the international relations. Now, that's part two. Part one is local. Part two is international travel with the amendments. Part three is what most people call the treaty. And it is absolutely not what people have been thinking or saying it is. It's a business deal to funnel money from wealthy nations to oligarchs in poor nations to geographically distribute the manufacturing of these fraudulent tests and jabs. They want billions of dollars to go looking for pathogens all around the world, bring them into a WHO coordinated laboratory network so they can enter them into what they call the pathogen access and benefit sharing system. It's the new gold mine. It's the new, you know, digging for or drilling for oil and natural gas. Think about it. If you find the next really scary, you know, genetic sequence and claim that there's some pathogen out there that's going to kill everybody, you've got a gold mine. Even better, it's worth billions of dollars to big pharma. And so the smaller nations are actually expressing their national sovereignty. It's not an attack on national sovereignty. Mm-hmm. It's the idea that these biological resources are their sovereign resources, and they don't want big pharma companies like Pfizer and Moderna pirating that information, turning it into boosters that they then go and make billions of dollars with. These nations want a piece of the pie.
They want some of the action. They want to put their beak in the injection trough, in the pandemic trough.
I haven't heard it put that way, but you nailed it. That's it exactly. And so this is not about stopping, preventing, or preparing for the next pandemic. This is, you know, preparing to profiteer from it. They want billions of dollars of contracts to put products in warehouses so that when their fear-mongering infrastructure triggers the alarm bell and Tedros says, oh, there's a public health emergency of international concern, PHEIC, literally fake, right? Mm-hmm. But then they want to add to it an early action alert or a pandemic emergency or a pandemic. But the definition of all of those would not require a single person to have been declared to have died from whatever it is they're talking about.
As has been done in the past, right? There were pandemics declared in the past when no one actually died from the disease that they were declaring the pandemic from or for.
In previous years, the word pandemic is not legally defined, so its use is frivolous.
Yeah.
It's meant to propagandize and confuse people. Absolutely.
When you talk about the amount of wealth that's involved here, people, I think most people probably by now know that Moderna, which was a company formed to exploit the mRNA technology, had never had a successful product launch that was used commercially in a wide-scale application until this Fauci attack. And when Fauci's virus was unleashed on the world, then suddenly the mRNA technology was the only answer. Moderna suddenly becomes extraordinarily valuable. And two of the people who were founders of the company end up in the 400 richest people in the world. At the time that they entered that elite status, the advertising, the propaganda being pushed by the government, by big pharma, by corporate media, was that these injections are safe, effective, and fun. You know, take it, it'll restore life, you get to go have fun, it'll protect you, it'll protect others, it'll save grandma. It's 100% effective. It was over time that it became clear that, in fact, they weren't effective. And then, of course, as the emergence of adverse event documentation popped out, it became clear that they weren't particularly safe. And then, of course, as people dealt with the fallout of that, it wasn't fun at all. But the people who made the money haven't given it back. So we were sold on something that was absolutely not accurate. And the end result is billions were made all over the globe. That money still earned. Those people still sit in those mansions and lake houses laughing at the world that they sold this bill of goods to. Now you're saying the World Health Organization wants to be in the middle of this, and they want to be the ones deciding where the billions go. They want to make sure that this technology, whatever the next technology is pushed out so that anybody in any country can make money on it. The people that control these failed states, the dictators, the corrupt governments, they all want a piece of this pie. That's what you're saying?
Absolutely. And so let me give you some good news, some bad news, and some real news.
Nice.
Okay. The good news is they're having trouble because, when you've got a limited piece of the pie, even if it's tens of billions of dollars, everybody wants, their greedy share. And so the current state of affairs today is actually a relatively momentous day in what's going on with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of as we speak, and maybe a little bit later today, they are supposed to be having their final meeting, and it looks like they're not going to reach an agreement. Now, there's always a plot twist at the end. Who knows what they're going to do? They may ask for an extension. They might want to have a World Health Assembly special session, which is abbreviated WHASS. Maybe 6 months down the road to keep these negotiations going, because they simply, are unable to reach agreement. Now, with the amendments, there's supposed to be a new version circulating today. They've been negotiating with the treaty. There's supposed to be a new version of that circulating. We shall see what they make available whenever they make it available. All of it is predicated on the fraudulent idea that nations suffered because they didn't get enough jabs or enough tests, which is demonstrably false. But what's really going on here is not a desire to make people healthier and actually learn lessons from what happened the first 4.5 years. The lessons that they learned is that a lot of people got suckered into doing things that weren't good for them.
That's right.
And a lot of money changed hands. And so they're, more than doubling down. They want an order of magnitude more money. And I was able to publish an article because just yesterday they published their financials from 2023. And if you look at it, it's quite strikingly clear. And it's obvious. So, forgive me for stating the obvious. The wealthy nations, United States, European Union, Germany, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, France, Spain, so forth, gave millions and millions of dollars to the WHO.
Mm-hmm.
The WHO spent that money primarily in Africa and in the Middle East. It's a transfer of wealth from those who have to those who have less. Well, they want to up that by an order of magnitude, but direct it into the manufacturing locally of these products that don't work. It's insane. It's not going to make anybody healthier. It's just going to make a certain select few people wealthier. And they're having a difficult time. The good news is it doesn't look like they're going to, successfully pull this off for their meeting at the end of May. We shall see.
Well, that's great news. I mean, the fact that they're having trouble pulling it together isn't surprising, although I suspect that just running the negotiations is quite a profitable business. I'm sure that all the people that are involved in this are getting paid, and the people that do this kind of work who are being paid by taxpayers who don't even know they exist, who have no transparency or no oversight, I think generally they do pretty well. They fly business all over the world on a whim, and we support a very nice lifestyle for these negotiators.
Yeah, I can speak with some detail to that. Got in contact with in Australia, did a freedom of information request, and found out that just one trip from Australia to Geneva for two delegates for one of the meetings set their country back $47,000.
One trip.
One trip. And 194 nations, they've had 9 meetings in each of these two groups. And, part of the financials with the WHO, They, in 2023, had over 9,000 employees who earned an average of $131,000 a year. That was 30% of their $4.1 billion budget.
So think about this. So the median income in the United States, let's call it around $77,000. The median income for federal employees is just a little over $100,000. You're telling me that the average income for these people is $130,000? They're making nearly double the average wage of the people who are paying them to fly around the world and try to concoct these crazy agreements?
That's the truth. And they only spent, I think it was 8% of the WHO's budget. They spent 30% on salaries and only 8% on actual health-related products, which I don't even think they're health-related products. It was probably mostly spent on jabs for things like polio. I know it's an oral polio, but the money that we're putting into this, hundreds of millions of dollars, the United States was and has been the top donor. Where does it go? It goes to pay their salaries to, you know, concoct plots to gain more power and more money for them.
That's right. And that's the thing I think a lot of people just can't see. They can't see that just beyond their reach, just beyond their view, there is an army around the world of people that are living incredible lifestyles on this taxpayer dollar. Now, the United States, we don't feel that because we have an unlimited credit card. So it just gets added on to the $35 trillion, right? Now we're incurring $1 trillion of debt every 100 days. And the average person is starting to feel that in the form of inflation, right? It's reducing the value of what they have in their holdings. It's reducing the value of their W-2 earnings. So they feel it, but it's somewhat indirect. They don't actually see people writing the checks, and no one comes to them, taps them on the shoulder and says, hey, listen, your share of this giant boondoggle is X dollars. Please give us a check. I wish there was a direct billing situation where for every conflict and every UN event, the American taxpayer got an itemized bill and had to physically write a check to pay for it, because that would end this nightmare in seconds. But because it's hidden and covered by the credit card, it's allowed to continue.
Well, you know, follow the money is a good rule to follow. Now, I promised you good news. Yeah. That is good news. Having difficulty. The bad news is whether these amendments or treaty are adopted or not, the WHO is still going to be there. And that's what we need to change. So the news of taking action, I just encourage everybody, just go to exitthewho.com. If you're in a relationship that has gone so wrong and the other party is spending your money and harming people with that money, you're complicit with their crimes by the fact that you're funding them. Now, we've had in recent days 49 senators, all Republicans, and 22 attorneys general sign a letter of, you know, displeasure with the treaty and the amendments. And that's fine and dandy. But then they went on to say that they advocate reforming the WHO. But not one of those people have put forth any kind of proposal as to how that might happen. That's not even remotely on the table. They all need to wake up and realize that this relationship has gone bad. We need a divorce. We need to exit the WHO. You can go to exitthewho.com. Now, this is not without precedent. I've been promoting this for well over a year. Mm-hmm. We've gotten over 55 members of Congress to sign on as co-sponsors to Andy Biggs's House Resolution number 79, H.R. 79, which it's a page and a half. Anyone could read it and understand it. Tell the WHO we're leaving. We're obligated to give them a one-year notice. Stop giving them money and repeal the legislation that got us involved with this corrupt organization in the first place way back in 1948.
Now,
it's really easy to understand. Exit the WHO.
So look, I think I could draft up a very, very simple restructuring plan, reformation plan for this group. It'd be easy. It'd be one line. It would simply be one word that says dissolve. There's no reason for this group to exist just to churn money. And if you look at the work they did during the pandemic or plandemic or whatever you like to call it, you know, they were a destructive force. And while they didn't have sovereign control of nations, they couldn't dictate what would be done. Just as we saw township and county officials who maybe turned a local school into an injection center or supported the use of masks, which has since been shown to be harmful, supported shutting down schools and churches. You know, just as those people pointed to maybe the county health official, then they pointed to the CDC, and they pointed to the World Health Organization. There's a complete lack of accountability. We're told all these people at each level of government are experts whose sole purpose in life is protecting our health. Each of them then turns and points to some other expert and says, well, I don't have any voice. I don't have any choice. I have to do what I'm told. And it flows all the way back to the veterinarian who runs the World Health Organization, who actually then could issue an edict that, while not binding, effectively controlled the actions of governments all the way down to your township and county. And so there's that moral suasion, that other element of this that has to be addressed. We must not just say we're not going to sign this agreement. Getting out of the World Health Organization is something that we absolutely should do. We should stop putting our money into these kinds of antics. By the way, has there ever been a national leader beyond Andy Biggs that said we should exit the World Health Organization?
I think you know the answer to that.
Let's see. Who was that? I wonder, what was that guy's name? That's it. That was Trump. Oh, right. And imagine, you know, there was another international treaty that was put together. It was on the climate hoax, and it was the Paris Accords, the Paris Climate Accords. And the last 3 days of the last negotiation of those Paris Climate Accords extended. They actually extended 3 extra days. And those last 3 days were all about this group of 77, which is actually more than 77 countries. It's more like 130 countries that include dictatorships and communist countries and theocracies and failed states, who were demanding that the $100 billion commitment made by, quote, developed countries, and we all know who the developed country is that ends up footing all these bills, that means the United States, that the $100 billion that had been committed would be a legally binding obligation. The good news was, thankfully, to our founders, in order for that to happen in the United States, they would have had to get it through the Senate. The Senate would refuse to pass such a thing. The government didn't even take it to the Senate. And those negotiations ended with us just having a moral obligation to fund these failed states and dictatorships and corruption around the world. And I know the dealers in all the supercars, Ferrari and Maserati and Lamborghini, I know that they had to be hanging on the edge of their seats hoping that we would send those checks, because we'd have bought more mansions and supercars with that money around the world than imaginable, right? It would have been a great boost to the mansion industry. But the truth is, there was no reason for us to be putting money to those countries. Now they've turned it around and used that hoax as an argument to support the invasion of the country. It seems that there's really no fear-mongering crisis that they won't create and use to convince people in the West to surrender their rights, surrender their health, surrender their nation, all so that this cabal of opportunist globalists can make more money. It's really quite insane that the West goes along with it. But if you go back to the time of Fauci being, effectively president, we had in Manhattan, if you looked at Manhattan, I did this, you look at Manhattan, Tokyo, Delhi, and Los Angeles, the worst outcomes statistically were in Manhattan, supposedly the epicenter of brilliant medical thinking and great education and the world's expertise center for nearly everything. They had by far the worst outcomes. Delhi had far better outcomes despite being a more densely populated city that had both third and first world conditions. Tokyo had much better outcomes being a more densely populated city with obviously a first world sort of position. And I think LA came in second, being less densely populated than Manhattan, but following the same
protocols. I was waiting for you to determine which world Los Angeles is in, because I live in the Los Angeles area. I was waiting for you to say it was third world.
Well, isn't it first and third? I mean, I guess if you're making movies and successfully earning $20 million a film, it's pretty first world. You could do anything you want. If it's but if you're stuck in some of the tougher areas there,
If you find yourself in any underpass, you're definitely in the third world.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, and that condition has spread elsewhere. So now they're going to have this meeting in a couple of hours, the final meeting. Well, I guess, I'm sorry, they've already had it. They're already in it. They're going to have
it's the final meeting for now. There's always going to be more. And so to summarize all of this, the things that affect your life the most are local. So all of the issues that you started this segment on whether it's school board, city hall, county, state, federal, the issues are the people who attempted to abuse your rights and freedoms over the last 4.5 years. They didn't need any change to an amendment to regulations or a new agreement internationally to attempt to do the things that they attempted or succeeded in doing over the last 4.5 years. That battle is still local. The amendments, we have to be very aware that when you leave the country or someone you know and love wants to go on holiday or business or go visit family or, you know, when you're outside of the confines of the United States, you're on your own. And what, you know, is the agreement going back 19 years is that any foreign nation, if you're on their territory, you are at their mercy. And they want to make that even worse.
Yeah, it's incredible. Okay? I mean, many of us know folks who were traveling maybe on a vacation to the Bahamas or somewhere, and they ended up in a resort where they were locked in and had to stay because, you know, they either exhibited a symptom or were actually genuinely sick or took one of those crazy tests, which, you know, you pointed out earlier, the PCR test was not effective, did not work. And of course, the guy who created those, you may remember, said they were not designed for this shortly before he experienced sudden death. And once he was gone, of course, they just continued to use them and use them. And for those that remember back then, the way those tests were processed had a big impact on what was found in the material they were testing. And there was a, you know, sort of a cycle count that you could do. You had to cycle them a certain number of times. And the more you cycled those tests, the more you would be likely to find virtually anything you were looking for. So if they wanted to find more cases, they could just spin up the number of cycles they would run the tests at or spin them down to find less. So we were using this failed test.
Completely, totally fraudulent from the get-go. And let me, we're talking about the international travel.
Yeah.
We may have talked about this the last time, but if you think about the date, January 19th, 2017, on that date, the Obama administration was their last day in office. And just before Trump was inaugurated, they put in a final ruling from the CDC, and they defined a handful of terms. One of them was redefining sticking a swab up somebody's nose halfway into their brain. They changed the definition to make that be non-invasive. Okay, I'm sorry, but that is invasive. They changed the definition. They also changed the definition of an ill person. Literally, the term ill person is defined in CDC regulation. And one of the things that could be used as, you know, defining someone as an ill person, if you get off an airplane and you feel warm to the touch and you have a head or a stiff neck, you could be determined to be an ill person. And then, you know, all of the abilities and controls that they have to isolate, quarantine, and mandate what happens to people. This is what the concern is in the amendments.
Yeah,
is a business deal to distribute money. And so today, hopefully, or maybe over this weekend and coming days, I encourage people, by all means, don't listen to me. Don't listen to anybody who's talking about this. The misinformation has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Get a hold of the actual documents and read it for yourself, because the way all of this is being spun, everybody's confused. And so it looks like they're having serious problems, but the summary of all of it is, you know, go to exitthewho.com, and over the next 6 months or so between now and election time, very simple question for any member of Congress or the Senate. Have you signed on to exit the WHO? Do I see your name as a co-sponsor? Because if I don't see your name as a co-sponsor, I guess I got to vote for somebody else.
Yeah, it should be a very significant part of how we evaluate candidates. And one of the things that we always encourage everyone to do is actually look beyond just the 30-second ad and really look at these candidates. What is it you're voting for? What is it you're voting against? There's, of course, an extraordinarily effective use of language by the leftists and the globalists that are basically attacking the United States right now from inside. And they apply the term radical to anyone who says, I want a balanced budget. I want a constitution that's in full effect. I want to have, a government that's not intruding in every aspect of my life. And I'd prefer to put Marxism on the back burner. That makes you radical. But if you're for government intrusion and wildly irresponsible spending and all of these, you know, radical ideas, well, then you're a moderate. It makes no sense. The truth is, it is the Jim Jordans and the Matt Gaetzes that are fighting the fight for the American people that are the moderates. The moderates who say, I want my constitution back. And it is the people who are pushing for things like giving more power and money to the World Health Organization and the International Office of Migration and the rest of the UN cabal that are saying we must kneel to these Marxist ideologies, otherwise we might offend a leftist, and that would be unacceptable. That's a radical view, and they're shifting this country and the rest of Western civilization to a hard left position. That's radical. It's not radical to say you should not be forced to take an injection by your regional manager of sales or the division vice president who controls your business unit should not have the authority to say thou shalt be injected by something that you don't want to take. We have to get away from that. And so in any event, I'm hopeful that we find more support for exiting this World Health Organization nightmare. And I'm glad to hear from you that these negotiations are not effective because, you know, apparently there aren't that many countries willing to surrender to it. But thank you for the, go ahead.
It's not that it's not good versus evil. It isn't that there are good nations fighting the good fight. It's evil versus evil. And they're having difficulty because the evil parties all around are unable to settle on, you know, how big do they want the pie to be and who gets which piece.
Well, when there's money to grab, that's right. When there's money to grab, the knives come out. So let's hope they just fight each other to a bloody mess and we get left out of it, right? Just leave us alone and give us our money back. So, exactly. Well, James, thanks so much for joining the Conservative Voice today and giving us an update on this. Hopefully we'll get a chance to connect again when this thing is totally, at least solved to some degree. And hopefully you'll come back and give us another update in the future.
Well, thank you very much. One last thing, they tell us what they're doing for the most part, and they view our silence as consent. So I just encourage everybody to speak up.
So you're saying complacency is complicity?
Absolutely.
Thanks, James. Look forward to talking to you again. So now we're gonna shift our attention to a much more local. We're going from the World Health Organization, the globalist disaster, to a much more local approach or a much more local focus. You know, we are fortunate in Pennsylvania to have the largest Freedom Caucus group in any state legislature in the country. At least I think that's what we are. We were last time I checked. In that group, we've got a lot of folks who are fighting hard to do exactly what we've talked about earlier, to restore our Constitution, restore the rule of law, restore fiscal sanity to our government, and protect the rights of the citizenry who, you know, let's face it, takes those rights for granted. One of the folks that has been on the show a number of times that is in the fight is Stephanie Borowitz. And Stephanie joins us now. Stephanie, thank you for joining the Conservative Voice.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. I love coming on.
So tell us, what shenanigans are going on in the House now in the Pennsylvania legislature? What is the cabal of radicals up to now?
A lot. We had to change, thankfully, Representative Rapp put an amendment in to change a doula bill because they wanted to say pregnant individual instead of mother. I mean, the insanity of that. And then the majority of Democrats didn't even vote for the amendment that changed it to mother. I mean, this is insanity. And so, obviously, I'm coming on to talk about, too, the gun control bills. There were two gun control bills this week that were defeated on the floor. So you need a majority of the vote. So they only had 101, not 102. It was 101 to 100. Frank Burns, a Democrat, voted against gun control because obviously he's in an election year and he has a Republican red area. And so he did vote with us and they didn't have a majority. And we shot down two gun control bills. So it was exciting.
Wow. And but the margins you're expressing, that what you're telling us, the margins, we were dependent upon a Democrat deciding to vote with the interest of his constituents rather than the interest of the cabal. And that's what saved us, at least from getting it through the House. You know, we still have the Senate. But that's how thin this thing is?
That's how thin it is. But what was so great is Republicans stood together and we all said every Republican voted against it. And so it just shows if Republicans are strong, uphold the Constitution, we can defeat Democrats and their agenda. And I mean, you could hear it in the speaker, Joanna McClinton's voice. She goes, "Bill failed." I mean, I was,
wow.
And I, the first one failed and I didn't expect that. And I just stood up like cheering. And I looked around, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm the only one, but I don't care.
Well, that, I mean, it's great news and it's exciting because there have been some bills that have squeaked through in the House and sometimes with Republican support. And I suppose that the difference between a bill getting through that is radical and is against the interests of the citizenry is really whether or not that citizenry is paying attention. If the voters, if the electorate is paying attention and giving some guidance to their elected officials who often stray, then maybe that makes the difference. I mean, what do you think really made the difference here? Was it lobbyists? Was it citizens? Was it just that it is an election year? What really compelled people now this time to stand together with their voters?
You know, I don't really know, because I was even saying, my gosh, we were flooded in the Capitol with anti-gun groups. So we had Ceasefire PA with all their orange shirts that they don't even really know what they're talking about. And then they bring down hunters. They say, oh, we're hunters, but we're for, you know, sick gun safety. So it's just so deceptive. It's such lies. And I really don't know, but all I know, maybe the pressure some of those Republicans felt from the gun groups, you know, like that we have to stand with the Constitution. If we stand together, you know, we'll help protect you when you come up to an election. But it maybe hearing from 2A people, Second Amendment people, I just was saying we need 2A groups down there. And I know these, sadly, the anti-gun groups are funded.
Oh, yes.
They're so well funded. You can tell. That's how they're down there every other week, stopping in every office with their orange shirts. And they bring even, I mean, it's just manipulation.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm really not sure what the difference was this time, maybe an election year. But I was just proud to all of us that we stood together. And it just shows when we stand together, we defeat Democrats every time.
That is a great story. I mean, it is exciting to see that happened. It would have, I'm sure it was fun to be in the middle of it. I'm sure there was, it was electric as a moment because, you know, we see so many defeats in the country. We see so many of our elected officials turning against the electorate and voting in line with their donors. You know, Republicans are taking money from teachers unions and therefore serving the teachers unions when it comes to voting time. Republicans that are not fighting back against the invasion because maybe that somebody they know has given them a donation. You know, a tragic sort of example of that, of course, is Governor Abbott in Texas, who was found to have been getting donations from people who traffic the migrants and then build housing developments for them. It's not always clear where people stand. So when you see this kind of a vote, it's great. And it's also possible, I suppose, that there isn't one reason. It might be that the Second Amendment advocacy groups had some effect, and maybe the voters had some effects. And maybe just seeing the radicals in front of them shocked some of the weaker representatives into saying, well, this time I'm actually going to represent the people because I can't hand the country to these lunatics. The issue of funding, you know, where we see resistance on any major issue where the people are standing up, what we find is the people who are standing up are doing it voluntarily. And then we find that on the other side, all these activists are paid, whether they be door knockers making $18, $20, $25 a contact, or whether it be organizers, something like the New American Economy that make, you know, $250,000 a year, people in the homeless industry who are profiting, you know, $250,000, $150,000, $300,000 a year in salary, making sure we have the maximum number of homeless, because that's really what they do. You know, and yet we see when the citizens are fighting for themselves, they're fighting on their own dime. And I think that is a huge disadvantage. How many gun groups, or rather anti-Second Amendment, how many of these people are there? Like, how big was that entourage that paraded down the halls of our Capitol?
Well, I don't know how big they are, but you can just tell. They all come in their orange shirts. It's like the PA Fair District. I'm like, you guys, it's just unreal. And you know somebody's funding this stuff. And it's probably George Soros, you know, Barack Hussein Obama, you know, the ones behind all of this who want, who he told us, we want to fundamentally transform this nation. And so they do this incrementally. And so there, the only one I could say was down there for sure was the orange shirts, the ceasefire, and then all the Democrat ladies were trying to wear orange for it. And it was just pathetic. But what the best part of it was that the speaker announced this group that they were in the gallery watching these votes. And the minute the bill failed, they all left. I'm like,
nice.
It was incredible to do it in front of that whole group that had spent the whole day there. And then they just left, like, when the bill failed. Now, listen, they're going to move to reconsider. They've already made the motion to reconsider these bills. So we need to, A, pray, two, make sure the 2A community knows we have to keep fighting against this and we need to hear their voices. They do a great job at emailing all this. I get a lot of emails. And three, we've got to just make sure that they're down there involved. And then pray for Frank Burns, because if it's like the Pelosi regime, he's going to get hammered by people down there. Democrats are not allowed to go out on their own. Like, they must fall in line, just like Pelosi. And if not, they get a smackdown. And so pray for Frank Burns, pray for Republicans to stand strong when more of this nonsense comes up. And it just, again, like I said, be strong, Republicans, and we defeat Democrats' plans every time. So we will see.
And they don't hide their plans. You know, you talk about the fact that they announced in advance, we are going to fundamentally change this country. And if you watch every day, they are executing that plan. And it is somewhat naive to believe that those who have almost unlimited access to capital, armies of paid activists, they have a huge percentage of Congress and the state houses under their control. To not take them seriously is something that I think the average American does at their own peril. But the truth is, we have a lot of people who are Republicans and conservatives and constitutional patriots who are just a little bit naive to the threat that these people pose to them. They really don't, I don't think, fully understand the kind of pressure that these globalists and leftists are putting in our state legislatures. So the gun control bill failed. Tell me, how many bills have they put forward on this same line of thinking? How many of these anti-constitutional bills have you seen?
Right, unconstitutional. And we almost won that, too. Bernstein put up a vote of constitutionality, which obviously it's not constitutional. I would say, they run two that passed. They pulled one because one failed. So four, six, at least, six, seven. Maybe six to eight between that many. Now, how many are on the docket, like in, like put out as bills? A lot. There's, I mean, everything. And then they stand on the floor. Oh, we don't want to take your Second Amendment away. Right. But they won't do a darn thing to protect children. You know, they say, oh, it's about the children. Okay, we'll put an armed guard at every school. But they refuse to do that. And so it's complete hypocrisy. And this is an agenda to disarm us. It's clear. It's clear because every bill puts more control on a law-abiding citizens. Criminals don't obey laws. I mean, it's illogical, and you can see the plan and agenda to disarm us. Because once we're disarmed in America, guess what? Tyranny's right there beside it. Look at Canada now. I mean, it's scary. And so Americans know that. That's why I said that on the floor. We will not be disarmed. You know, in the spirit of the Texans, come and take it, guys, because we're not going to go down. We're not going to lose our ability to, you know, defend ourselves in this nation against tyrannical governments and against, you know, everything that's going on. Look at the illegals, what they're doing, the crimes we're seeing in the cities and even in rural areas. We had an issue over here in our rural area of an illegal. And it just, it's very, very scary what's happening in this nation. And so it's more important than ever to defend ourselves.
It is scary. I mean, we had last night a town hall in Malvern. Keystone Town Halls is a group that we work with that does a lot of town halls. We did one last night. And we had someone there who is very active in Philadelphia. And she told a story about a 14-year-old girl. She's talking to a mother who won't let her child go out. And she said, well, you know, why can't this child go out and play? Well, the child can't go out and play because she might die. The child isn't able to go outside and play because she might be killed in her own neighborhood. And, you know, that wasn't the case in that neighborhood in years past. That is a new thing. That is a change. Is that change accidental? Well, look at what's gone on with prosecuting attorneys. Look what's gone on with law enforcement, the war against real law enforcement. Look what's gone on with the invasion that's created more and more power for these international gangs like MS-13 and Sinaloa and Jalisco and all the rest of them, Golf, Zeta. You know, it's not accidental. It's a plan that's being executed on our cities. We've only got about a minute left. Can you tell us what's coming up next in the Pennsylvania State House? What is the State Freedom Caucus, you and your colleagues, what are you guys fighting next?
The intrusion of government, you know, and to keep... Did I lose you? I'm sorry.
Yep, you went down for just a second,
okay.
But go ahead.
Sorry. Just the intrusion of government. I mean, we see that onslaught of Democrat bills where it's just government's the answer, you know? And so as a Freedom Caucus, if it grows government, we're against it. And so it's a great, great thing because we're literally taking bill by bill and saying this grows government. And we want limited government, upholding the Constitution. And so it's going to take time, but I see it making a difference. I see it making a difference that we stand up against everything and not just say, oh, well, we can't fight every battle. No, we're going to try to fight every battle and make sure we fight against it. So Democrats are bringing a huge amount of government. I mean, you see with the Shapiro, he thinks government's the answer for everything. So increased spending, mm-hmm. increased taxes, and so we're pushing back on that. It is a fight, but Pennsylvania, we have to defend and make sure Pennsylvania stays free. And right now it's based on the PA Senate. And so hopefully we win back the state house and then we can hold Shapiro, hold him back more, the house and the Senate. I mean, we can't lose Pennsylvania. And so we're in the fight of our lives, but we're fighting. So.
Well, thank you for keeping up that fight. And thank you for joining us today in the Conservative Voice. Hopefully we'll chat again soon. Thanks, Stephanie.